Okay, good morning, everybody. We've got 9:30 up here. Welcome to, is this the last session? Is this Friday? Is there anything after this? Okay, so the next to the last session. Welcome to our session on creating open educational resource content playlist as textbook alternatives. My name is James Klopper-Grossklag. I'm Dean of Educational Technology and Other Things at College of the Canyons. And this is my colleague, John Makovich. He's Director of Distance Learning at College of the Canyons as well. We're very pleased to be here to share with you what we think is a very exciting project. We want to acknowledge the support of FIPSE, the Fund for the Improvement of Postsecondary Education at the U.S. Department of Education, that supports our project. And before we dive in, I want to give you a little bit of context here. We're with College of the Canyons, as I said. College of the Canyons is a California community college. We serve about 25,000 students a year, about 5,000 online. And also to give you a sense of the context, California community colleges, number 112, we serve nearly 3 million students a year. If the state funded us properly, we'd probably serve 6 million students a year. California community colleges represent the largest educational system in the world. All right. And today's takeout menu for you is that we will introduce you to the motivation for new alternatives for textbooks. We trust that you will learn about open educational resources as we're implementing the creation of open educational resources through our grant. And you will observe some of the basic steps that are involved in creating OER playlists. Now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, John, who will take you through all the steps.
All right, how's everybody? You guys doing well? Everyone wide awake? I'm going to try to venture down here, and I think the microphone will work. Am I okay if I'm here? Okay, good. Excellent. So I wanted to give you a little bit of background as far as what we're doing, why we're doing it. Man, the field is changing fast, you know, in terms of open educational resources. And, you know, goodness, I've been to a few presentations, was just at Cable's presentation, and there's so many different things going on that we're just introducing sort of a slice of what's going on today and what the scope of our grant is and giving you a feel of that. So the first question is the textbook forever? And I think most of us know that the answer to this question is certainly, at least in its current form, probably no. How many of you are aware that textbooks cost a lot of money? Okay, well, at least I got some laughter out of that. That's good. We'll go ahead into the next one. The textbook today is made of a whole lot of paper. And unfortunately, at times, it can seem like it's not the right kind of paper. Students are spending a tremendous amount of money to be able to just go through their education because of the cost of textbooks. Now, textbooks have been expensive for quite some time, and it's not to say that that there's no justification. There's quality work that goes into them. The publishing companies have done a great job of producing some fine works. The real question is, are there barriers to education that exist for students? You know, are there real limitations that prevent them from being able to achieve their goals and their dreams of pursuing post-secondary education? So, next one. So, you know, I did a little bit of math here just to try to figure out at least an estimate of how, you know, what percentage cost we're dealing with here. So let's consider one example. First of all, student spends $180, let's say, on a textbook for a course. You know, a little bit above average, but certainly when you're talking about courses, like, you know, some of the key math courses, English courses, a biology course for sure, you can have some quite pricey books. And let's say $30 on a textbook supplement, which I'm sure you're all aware of is not too outlandish to expect something like that, right? I mean, these things add up. So now you got a subtotal of, let's say, $210, right? Okay, so we'll start there. In California Community College System, a three-unit course, the current cost per unit is $26 per unit. So you're talking about, for the course itself, $78. So the textbook for that course represents 73% of the overall cost of that course. Now, this is just one example. Of course, the averages play out differently, but this is a pretty, this isn't, these aren't unrealistic numbers, right? I mean, these are fairly realistic values here. So certainly in California, the problem is magnified to some extent because the students are realizing, hey, wait a minute, I only paid $78 for the whole course. And now I've got this book that costs that much. So We'll go ahead and go to the next one. So here is a motivation. This is a driving force. I would say, you know, arguably, certainly not the only motivation. And by the way, I just a side note, we will have time for questions at the end. So, you know, definitely save up your questions. We'll have a lot of time for questions and discussion. You know, we can think of other motivations, other driving forces, certainly access to education and whatnot. But cost is certainly, I think, one of the reasons that we came into this discussion to begin with. So now our goal that we wanted to pursue at College of the Canyons, you know, we're one community college in a system of community colleges in the state of California. And our goal was to start with this given statement. The textbook does provide us structure and content. I teach courses as well. I teach in the earth sciences, geology, earth science, meteorology courses. And one of the things that I like about a textbook is that the textbook provides me that outline, that structure, right? I mean, how many of you are teaching currently? A few of you? Do you count on the textbook for things like that? I mean, to provide sort of a sense of flow for the course? I certainly think that that's a useful, useful purpose for a book, as well as, of course, the content itself. So if we're starting with the given that the textbook provides us structure and content, let's go to a few of our goals with this grant. The first goal was the focus on creation of supplemental materials and the rental of existing textbooks. We wanted to support some of the action that was currently going on at our college in terms of being able to rent out existing textbooks to students. There was already a textbook rental program. We wanted to be able to supplement and continue to support that, not to conflict with that. But in addition, we wanted to focus on the creation of some supplemental content, some supplemental materials. So, you know, part of the initial task was to go out there and start walking the campus and talking to faculty, right? Being that we're working on a smaller scale, you know, not trying to produce anything large here, it simply came down to that. Going and walking, you know, office to office, going from meeting to meeting, and trying to get faculty on board with being interested in creating some supplemental materials that before they may have been sending their students to pay 30, 40 bucks to purchase. So we've got a few faculty that became interested in doing something like that. So that's sort of the first prong of the attack here. The second part has to do with developing playlists of academic content, and I'll get to what I mean by the term playlist here, but playlists of academic content to either supplement or replace textbooks. Again, if we can create a structure, if we can create a some sort of a linear thread or linear pathway through a series of content objects, then perhaps we can emulate what's going on with the structure that the textbook provides by utilizing some content that's already there. So that's our second goal, and we have a 2-year grant, so we're sort of emerging into year 2 right now, and we're going to be pursuing that second goal a little more heavily there. And the third one, to prepare some potential models of content delivery to be prepared for the post-textbook era if it arises. So what types of things are we going to test on our campus? What types of models are we going to develop on a smaller scale that might be able to become useful at a larger scale? So those are the types of things we're looking for. How can we package this stuff up? In fact, and we'll go ahead and go to the next one. I just wanted to itemize this word playlist because this is really, I think, one of the key reasons why we decided to pursue this grant to begin with. I can't tell you how many conversations I got into with people where, you know, there were many people realizing, okay, I can find content. It takes me a while, but I can go find content. I can start with Google and try to narrow down what might be public domain or, you know, open educational resources. I can go to all the open educational resource repositories that might exist out there. I can do those searches, but I've got an object here, an object here, an object here, and they're all loose and they're all, you know, they're not put together in any kind of, meaningful way at times. So, the playlist idea was something we wanted to pursue to bring that all together. So I sort of already answered this question ahead of time, but to add a couple more things to it, we realized, I think, you know, through many of the discussions even before applying for this grant, that there is so much material that's available on the internet. I mean, it's kind of funny when you stop and think about it. We're still using textbooks. You know, obviously, most commonly, that's the form of delivery of content for a course. And yet, we've got this nearly unbounded or infinite set of content that's available out on the internet. So when you just think about it at that simple level, we know something has to be done, right? We know something has to be done. There's just too much material out there to ignore it and to not try to bring it together. So that's sort of one of our key motivations. Another driving force is what happened to the music industry. And this is something that I hear talked about frequently when it comes to discussions about open educational resources. Used to be, 10 years ago? Maybe not even. You could go to any mall or just go around the corner and you could find the local music store. And obviously they still exist. I mean, they're not all gone, right? But wouldn't we all agree that they have certainly depleted in number? There certainly aren't as many of them. The business model changed. What changed it?
iTunes,
absolutely. Good, you get a gold star. iTunes changed it big time. And then Amazon Music, you can go to Amazon.com and purchase music. There's all kinds of other sites where you can go and buy songs. So, it makes a whole lot of sense what happened, right? Music became more instantaneously accessible. If I want to buy a song now, I don't want to drive down the road to buy it. Now, what's happened to movie rentals? Netflix, right? How many of you have used those, what are they called? The Redbox? Like outside the 7-Elevens at the grocery stores, right? So there's all kinds of easier delivery methods to get access to this sort of content. Now, textbooks, of course, it's not the same thing. I can't go and have a student pick out what they're going to learn, right? I mean, it's not quite that easy. We need to provide some guidance. We need to provide some sort of flow. So we can't create an exact duplication of the business model, right? But we want to give thought to what are some of the quality things that iTunes has done and the opportunities that iTunes has provided music, the consumer in terms of purchasing music, and how can we take some of those elements into the pathway of textbooks? So this is just to give you an idea of what a playlist would entail. Now, before I even talk about this, I want to tell you all that you do this every day. As educators, as people who work in education, we take content, we take information every day, and we bring it together. That's what we do. But what our goal is and what we want to try to accomplish with our grant and with our work, and we're starting to get there already, is to develop some strategies, some consistent pathway for being able to take this stuff and put it together. So here's an example of how you might take some content and make it flow. Let's start, for example, with, let's say I want to develop a physics textbook, right? I would start perhaps with, might make sense to create chapter one. Okay, so I start with chapter one. I write out some introduction text. Okay, so I compose that. I write that as faculty. It might not be long. It might be a page. It might be two pages. I don't know, but I write it. Then what I do is I say, okay, I write into that text the ability to transition to content that already exists out there. I need to create a bridge, right? When you write an essay, you have transition sentences between your paragraphs. This is the same sort of idea. So I write into that introduction the transition to object number one. Then I go find object number one. I search all the open educational resource repositories, I search open source content, and I find what, let's say in this case, might be a website with text and articles. It might have useful information that directly pertains to what I'm talking about in the course. Possibly this could change over time. It might be a news article that is valid now, but really next semester when I teach the course, it just might not be applicable anymore. So I might need to go find something else. As you can see, this will be an evolving work, right? But so are textbooks, aren't they? How many of you have experienced a situation where the new version of the textbook comes out a year later than the last version, right? I mean, that turnaround is very, very quick. So it's not unreasonable to expect that we're going to have quick turnaround in something like this as well. All right, so let's keep going. Let's say we link to a website with text and articles. Then I put in some more transition text or a transition video or a transition something, right? Something where I say, okay, this is what happened in that website that you just looked at. Here are the things that you need to point out. I'm their guide, right? That's my job in composing this work. I'm their guide. So then we link from that transition text to, let's say, some media. And I put in there captioned because, one of the things that we're really trying as hard as we can to maintain is accessibility of all of this content. To make sure that, why build it if it's not built right? to begin with. And that's one of the challenges that, and it is challenging to try to make sure that all that material gets captioned and made accessible. But that's one thing that we're taking very seriously at College of the Canyon. So we're working very hard to do that, to take all of the media that we're producing and captioning it. And so, we transition, let's say, to that media. We again transition to some more text. So I, you know, say, explain what happened in the video, blah, 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 and then go on to, let's say, another website, article, text, you name it. You get the idea, hopefully, from this, right? That by threading this content together, we've created a cohesive object, haven't we? We've created a learning object that consists of all the other learning objects and essentially walks the student through that learning process just as a textbook would. The challenge is all these different objects have, you know, teaching in the sciences, the key terms vary depending on who the author is. So, you know, you read one book and you've got all this vocabulary, and you read another book, it's got a different set of vocabulary. One of the challenges in bringing this together, and that we're going to experience for sure, is trying to find objects that make sense and utilize similar terminology and try to thread that together. So it's not going to be a walk in the park, right? But this gives you an idea of what our goals are. So again, just to recap a couple things, the basic idea is the stuff is already out there, let's use it. There is no shortage of content that's available on the internet. There may be a shortage of content available that is Creative Commons licensed, that is licensed in such a way that we can utilize it, but there is a lot of information out there. The second question is it more sustainable to do something like this than to develop fully open textbooks? A lot of this might depend on resources, right? At an individual college, would it be cheaper, more cost-effective, and more time-effective as well to do a playlist model than to write a full textbook? I think so. I mean, I can't imagine how much money would be asked of the college to produce a full textbook, you know, for one faculty to do that. You know, it's a very expensive proposition. So could a fusion of both technologies represent the future of content delivery? Almost definitely, right? I mean, it's so hard to predict what the final object is, if there is such a thing. We need to deliver the content. We need to deliver the information to students. The question is, what journey do we take and how do we adapt the technologies that exist and the information that's out there into something that we can utilize? Then, of course, the last part is that the fundamentals of the technique are familiar to most of us as educators. We are accustomed to assembling existing content. This is what we do when we teach a course. If you have ever used Blackboard or any learning management system and you've used a concept like the learning unit, you're constantly taking content, putting it together in somewhat of a linear fashion. That's part of what we do. We just want to seek out a more formal and packaged process. We want to try to provide some guidelines and some structure to give faculty the information that might be necessary to really thread this content together in a useful way. So that's sort of our goal with this. Where are we in the process? Well, our grant started in October 2009, so we're about a year or so into it now. And our major work began late November 2009, just because, you know, it takes a little time to get the wheels turning. We spent the last year focused exclusively on content production and content collection. So we focused on two things. We wanted to go find faculty on our campus that had already made works, you know, whether it's video, PDF files, you name it. We wanted to start collecting the content that was already out there. Faculty didn't have a place to put it. You know, there were other repositories that they could have put it, but there was no central place on our campus. They could have uploaded it to their Blackboard course, or they could have done this or that, but we wanted to provide a central location, and we do have a campus repository where the faculty can actually take that content and put it in one central location that is shared and open. So that was one of the key goals, was to track down people that are willing to contribute some of that content. The other key goal was to get people to create more content. And this happens through extensive conversation. This happens through James and I going and talking to faculty on a daily basis and trying to figure out, okay, what are your boundaries and your limitations right now? What's stopping you? You know, what are you not able to deliver to your students that you want to deliver? One of the perfect examples is we have engineering instructor at our college who was, she does surveying courses. And she said that the collection of surveying videos out there that she could use for her courses were simply not working. There really wasn't much material to pull from. They weren't effective pieces of content. The students weren't paying attention to them or getting much out of them. She wanted to create her own works. The grant, fortunately, has provided us some resources to be able to help with that. And, of course, the ultimate goal is to try to expand and improve on collections that might otherwise exist. So she did that. She's gotten, you know, had a chance to produce about 10, 15 videos, 15 objects now, including some documents and images and you name it. So this is what we've been doing, is trying to get this content, again, collected and created. This next year, so again, that was sort of this whole past year, is trying to get that content going. The next year, we're, you know, pretty much right now, starting on trying to take content that either those faculty have created or content that already existed with other faculty and thread it into cohesive objects like playlists. Now, we probably aren't going to seek out to build a full textbook playlist, but we might build full chapter playlists, so more like modules. So let's say, for example, I'll give you a perfect example. I teach about the Coriolis effect in my class. It's a topic that most students don't particularly love at first, and they usually don't understand. So, you know, you can look in a textbook all you want, but usually it's very finite to the extent that the students can actually get it. So, you know, one of the playlists that we're seeking out is to develop something that will actually, you know, try to approach that subject in a different way with a little more of an interactive sense. And the other thing that I want to keep in mind there is that when I teach about the Coriolis effect, I'm constantly pulling off of videos that are out there, some open educational resources that are out there. There's material out there that's working better than the textbook in this case. So now it's just a matter of piecing it together. So we're going to be targeting probably about 5 playlists that we want to develop, essentially more or less to try to work out the bugs, to develop a model for how this could work. So that's one of our initial goals there. The other thing I want to say before we go to questions, though, and I know I went pretty quickly. I talked pretty fast on this. So there's going to be lots of time for questions. But a couple other things I wanted to say. This is one, you know, sort of our long-term goal. Our grant will be done in a year. And what we're looking at is to say, okay, well, we've provided one slice of one opportunity for how material can be aggregated and collected in a useful way. What we want to try to do is take it to the next level and say, okay, you know, is this the only pathway that's useful, or, you know, is this part of a larger movement? And, you know, certainly I've been at other talks this week that have referred to, you know, larger scale conversations about open educational resources. So we're hoping that we can contribute one possible solution into a pot that's going to take this to the next level. And so, James, I don't know, did you want to add anything more to that? Or okay, well, this is a great time for questions, and there's lots of time. So I apologize if I spoke too quickly. Normally this takes me another 5 to 10 minutes. So how about any questions? We do have a microphone we can pass around. So question? Actually, we'll start with this one.
You mentioned that you had a repository that you deposited. What platform or software platform are you using for that repository?
Good question. We use Aquella for that. So the somewhat common repository tool. There's several schools that are using it. I know Kentucky's using it, and you know, Utah and a variety of other places. So yeah, it's been working quite well for us.
And since I have the microphone, I'll ask
you a question. Yeah, hang on to it.
What do you do when you're developing playlists like this, and you run across resources that go away? What do you do about link rot?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about a moment ago too, and that is that the just like a textbook has to be revised year after year, or at least every couple of years, there's a constant revision process that has to be undergone with something like this. Now, this would be, I think, the case for any collection of, anytime you collect open educational resources or utilize them, there's going to be the situation where you have to really check to make sure those things are still valid. That's one of the arguments, I suppose, for developing a full textbook, because you have a little bit more control over that content. It's not a bunch of pieces of content that are coming from other sources. So yes, there's the time savings in not having to write everything and build the boat from scratch, but you've got the time expenditure of making sure that that content is consistently edited. One of the things we want to try to tie in at our school is how we're going to get some element of peer review, or at least watching of the content that's going to happen within our institution, and maybe provide some recommendations for that too. So, question.
What incentives, if any, did you offer the faculty to come on board with you?
Good question. You know, it's funny you say that, because initially, not much. You know, we built into our grant the opportunity to provide faculty stipends, and that is an incentive, of course. And that's not sustainable, of course, right? What's interesting is that we had several faculty come to the game on this one without even knowing that we were offering stipends. It wasn't until we told them later that they were going to get stipends for the production of their work that they happened to be excited about that. What we're charged with at our school, and luckily we're small enough and we're, you know, agile enough to be able to try to pull this off, we're going to be establishing sort of an open educational resource committee on our campus that we don't have right now. And I think the one goal that we are going to work on developing is how in the end this could end up either sort of, and this is something that Cable had mentioned in his last presentation, how that self-publishing concept can bring you that attention. You know, if faculty are interested in making a name for themselves, or, you know, for the work that they're producing, to get their name out there, there's so many venues for that, whether it's the open educational resources repositories that exist, or SlideShare, or a variety of other tools out there. There's a lot of opportunity to publish yourself and get yourself out there and get your name out there. So,
and I'll just jump in here and say it's also a matter of the culture on campus. We're extremely fortunate on our campus that our chief executive officer believes passionately in open educational resources as a social justice issue. So she's quite willing to include that in her addresses, and to include the names of faculty members who are producing in her speeches. So we're very fortunate, but it's a cultural question on the campus. So it's quite clearly seen that from the top, this is a desirable thing for people to be doing.
Okay. Yep.
So as you're producing materials like what you've discussed with this grant, what kind of licenses are you putting on them, and can others like us take advantage of them?
Absolutely. We are essentially using CC BY. We are having discussions with the faculty as to what that is. Many of the faculty on our campus, you know, they're still brand new to the concept of Creative Commons. So we're having to do a lot of education of faculty. But yes, the license that we're asking of them is the CC BY license, that the content would be remixable, the content is usable for free with attribution. So yes, anybody can use the content. Now, our repository is pretty much in its infancy still. You know, it takes a long time to build a repository from scratch. So we have a few hundred objects into the repository. People are more than welcome to go to it and poke around. We can give you the URL to it. You can get in as a guest. That's perfectly fine. But you will see it grow a lot, I would say, even the next year and the years to come. So don't expect it to be a central place to go, but you're certainly welcome to go and take a look and see what's there. So hopefully that answers the question. But yes, CC BY.
And I'd also jump in here and say that a carrot for the faculty is the production support that we can give them.
Yeah.
So sure, if you're producing something, you don't have to license it with Creative Commons. But if you want our production staff and you want to put it in the repository, then you agree to license it that way.
Yeah, I was wondering how, given infancy, because we're struggling with the same thing in Kentucky, is how do you choose what goes in there? Is it the high volume courses? Is it your basic 100 level stuff? Is it, we'll take whatever we can get because those are the faculty that are, you know, whoever's willing will take it. Mm-hmm. Are you being selective? or is it just catch as catch can?
Great question. Initially, are we being selective? No. Initially, long term, our goal, of course, is to be selective. Initially, we're looking at trying to provide some numbers of objects that are in the repository. We want to provide incentive for people to actually go. However, we're not being entirely to the point where we're going to allow everything, because of the fact that we want people to go and see some quality objects that are going to be relevant. So it's a constant struggle. We haven't, at this point, refused people's contributions of content. However, that's primarily because we've been seeking these people out. So what we're trying to do is seek out the people who are going to contribute content from high-enrolled courses and whatnot. But when that engineering faculty came to us and wanted to contribute all that, we, of course, did not say no. You know, that she has an extensive library of videos in there. So, yeah, good question. Question over here.
I apologize. I came in a few minutes late, so I might have missed this. But did you show screenshots or kind of what it looks like?
No, good question. We did not show screenshots because what we're essentially developing is the strategy for how the content's put together. We don't have a programmer or anyone to develop a system or a platform for, other than the repository we have. We have an on-campus repository, but we don't have built-in system or coding or anything like that to be able to assemble it. I would love to do that. That's something that we aspire to do, is to have a really user-friendly system where somebody could go in and, you know, put all that stuff in, but we don't have that at this time. So at this point, it's a matter of essentially developing a list-like map of the content that's out there and finding, whether it's in the repository or elsewhere, finding a place to put that. So you had another question too?
Are you using like a specific rubric then for assigning your metadata to each thing so that when you move into that platform, you'll have consistency across all of the components?
Yeah, you know, we've established our own set of metadata, a fairly limited set initially at the college. It's going to grow. It's going to change. You know, what we're finding in discussions with faculty is that, you know, the questions come up all the time. Well, you know, I think if we put this information in, it would be useful. The other challenge, of course, is compatibility, maintaining compatibility with other open educational resource repositories and having consistent metadata. So we've, you know, started with IEEE, you know, LOM metadata, and, you know, just as a starting point, you know, it's going to evolve, it's going to change, and I'm hoping that there will be ever increasing numbers of discussions down the road for metadata standards. You know, I think that's something that anybody in working with open educational resources comments on, that's a real need, you know, to develop a more widespread set of standards. So, good questions.
Do you have highly mediated learning spaces at your college, or do you see students bringing more their personal devices that connect to the network? How do they access? I know you focus on supplemental materials to, you know, a main textbook, but, you know, how do you reach that student? If they don't have a lot of money to buy textbooks, you know, will they have the appropriate connections to actually get to it, or do they have to remain on campus?
Good questions. Wow, there's a lot of different ways to answer that. I, you know, as you were saying that, different thoughts ran through my head. One of them being, you know, mobile access to content, you know, computer labs on campus, access at home. We have, written into our grant the goal, the aspiration of trying to develop a system for the printing of content that is printable, from our repository. Now, of course, you can't print a video, you know, so there's certain things that we just can't output. But, we're looking into trying to provide some solutions on our campus for the dissemination, hard copy dissemination of content, so that more students would be able to access it. Through, student surveys that we've done on our campus regarding technology, I mean, we have a pretty strong feel that most of our student population has access one way or another to computers, whether it's on the computer labs on campus for sure, and then is at home, public libraries, you name it. So we haven't really faced too much of a limitation with that yet, but we're mindful of that, and we're looking at other ways to disseminate through printing and such. So, yes. Thanks, James.
So the OER component, I mean, that makes great sense. Have discussions come up yet about whether this is going to also start to accommodate perhaps non-OER, but institutionally licensed resources, i.e. library content or anything else, And so, or again, connections into LMS so that you're able to create an integrated environment mm-hmm. for the student so that, again, we're not telling them go here for this, but here for this mm-hmm. kinds of things. I'm just curious whether that's come up yet or.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the nice thing about using the repository system we use, the Aquella, is that we can fragment our repository into different spaces, essentially. You know, we have a section that consists of entirely open educational resources, but certainly providing links to, you know, we subscribe to a service called IntelliCom. That has 4-fee quality video content. We don't want to restrict the use of that content in courses. You know, it's something that we pay a license for at our college. Now, is that a sustainable, expandable model if we wanted to, you know, in the process of our grant to design a model that might be usable at other colleges or for other systems? That wouldn't be part of it. But are we going to implement that into what we do at our college? Absolutely. All the time.
And I would add also that one of the nice features of the repository system we use, Aquella, is that it has building blocks with all the major LMSs. So our faculty encounter the Aquella content, or our students encounter the content that we have in our repository in their LMS, in their courses.
Yeah.
But it doesn't live there. It's not trapped there. You know, the content goes into the LMS and it never comes out.
Right.
You know, it's... The repository gives us the ability to be LMS agnostic with the content. It doesn't, you know, the faculty member who, you know, has created content over the years and needs your help finding the content that was on, you know, two iterations ago of the LMS and who knows where that server is, or is it under the faculty member's desk on a flash drive that fell down? You know, who knows? This repository gives us that ability to say, let's put it all here.
Yeah, and the other beauty of that too is that, you know, when it comes to the learning management system, I mean, I think we've all been through this trap before. All this content's locked behind a closed door. It's in this person's course or in that person's course. And if you want to get access to it, you got to give somebody the password to your course and go and upload the content, blah, 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 blah. You know, how many times have we been there? The nice thing about centralizing the content really is twofold. One, that uniform access that everybody can get access to the materials. But two, there are discussions that you're probably all having at your colleges or systems as well about how to increase the amount of multidisciplinary learning and, you know, cross-disciplinary learning and in classes, let's say in a physics class, how to focus on quality writing and the sciences and whatnot. So we not only are trying to encourage our faculty to seek out the content for that purpose so that they might find materials they might not otherwise know to look for, but also we're working with a subgroup on our campus doing a program called Building the Scientist, and they're actually developing materials to expand beyond what's typically learned in a science class to things like scientific writing, scientific ethics, topics that may not normally be covered in your, you know, front cover to back cover biology book, but are so critical for somebody who wants to go in and become a scientist. So, it's exciting. That stuff really gets me going, you know, because I mean, that's where you really start to get into some material that faculty across so many disciplines can use as supplements for their courses and have already started looking into. So.
And again, if that material lives in the repository rather than in Professor Smith's LMS, then it's that much more easily accessible by everybody.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. I throw you this one, but I don't know if it will reach.
I have to say, in Kentucky, we've been really impressed with Florida's work mm-hmm. and ended up, and I say this for you all and for the general populace in the room, but we were a pilot site for their FIPSI grant and have found the Encore blueprint to be hugely beneficial, especially on the metadata side mm-hmm. and sort of the content review cycle. But then we're also a Quality Matters state and trying to figure out how to put Quality Matters, you know, integrate that. Mm-hmm. But my question is, what about content from other repositories? How friendly do you think your faculty will be to using other states' content, especially community college to community college?
You know, our faculty, probably very friendly. Faculty at Community College X, across the river, let's say, I don't know. I mean, every school has its own culture, as James had mentioned, too. You know, our faculty would love the idea. And we actually, right now are federated with the Orange Grove in our repository, possibly look into federating with you guys as well. The challenge is we don't have yet a whole lot of content to offer, but at least it's something, you know? So we'll talk about that because that's, I think, a growing point. The other thing about the comments about the Encore Blueprint and Quality Matters, it just goes back to the whole issue of how many different forms of metadata, recommendations exist out there and how some of them are not, you know, there's a lot of overlap, but there are some key differences. So we are hesitant to, we're riding a fine line because we're trying to expand the repository, but at the same time, we're hesitant to establish hard, fast metadata standards that we're going to use absolutely right now without changing. So yeah, we're looking into, certainly we're looking into the Encore Blueprint. For some guidance, but that's a tough one. Yeah, I think that's what, you know, that's the direction we're going, so.
And I appreciate Enid pointing to the work that's been done in Florida. We've been remiss in not acknowledging the work that Susie Henderson has done in Florida with the Encore Blueprint and the Orange Grove and that Enid is doing in Kentucky with the Learning Depot. There are a lot of great models out there that we've looked to and been guided and inspired by. Utah Education Network as well. The BC campus, up north, there are a lot of examples of repositories out there, institutional repositories.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the Orange Grove has been a huge source of inspiration for what we're doing and continues to be. You know, another conversations we've had too is that there's all kinds of repositories in systems like Aquella, and then there's repositories in other systems, some open source systems, then you've got homegrown, home programmed systems that are repositories. So the long-term challenge is, you know, we're providing a slice of an idea that we can hand into, like I said, this big pot, but ultimately it's going to be others, larger, you know, groups of others that are going to have to look at that and say, okay, maybe this is useful, maybe this is something that we can add in. But that's sort of our contribution to the pool, if you will. So,
and then that points to the fact that the open educational resource movement broadly is a growing movement. And if you're from a community or technical college, please take a look at the consortium, the Community College Consortium for Open Educational Resources, CCCOER. Cable Green is the current president of our board, and John and I are heavily involved in that organization, and we'd really love to get more members and more input into the direction of that organization.
Yeah.
You mentioned other institutional repositories and those such as created for faculty research, those types of things. Typically, those can be harvested or their content is discoverable through Google and other search engines. Is that also true for OER?
You know, that's a good question. In our repository, you can't do a Google search and find the content in our repository. You know, I'm new enough to the game, especially on that technological side of it, to not, I really haven't thought about that before. That's a question that I haven't given much consideration to. So you've got my wheels turning. You know, I in terms of discoverability, I think it would be great to be able to have you know, a more general search, and especially since Google now can, you know, you can filter through doing searches of Creative Commons licensed material and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just haven't thought about it. But right now, we're not indexed with Google. So,
I wonder, is there
right? Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, there's a search engine called OER Commons. I don't know if anybody can speak to how OER Commons works here. I'm not familiar enough with the.
Well, and then DiscoverEd is a great one. You know, just sort of Google-like search. But it's still not Google. I get it. You know, I mean, it's going to Google is that fresh and quick destination. So, I don't know if anyone yet, like James said, if others want to comment on that, because I just have a gap there.
Well, and Creative Commons has a search called CC Search, which I think uses Google as the engine, but it's real easy. You can say, only show me objects that I can revise. Only show me objects. And what it does is it's giving you objects that are licensed with Creative Commons licensing that meet your criteria out of that search. So it's not perfect, but it's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And I'd encourage you to engage your librarians in this conversation, especially your reference librarians. We just launched a big project called the Open Course Library Project, where we're opening our entire gen ed curriculum with Creative Commons licensing, and our faculty ask this very question. Hey, it's great that there's all this stuff out there, but how do we find anything? And our research librarians in the room said, give us 5 minutes. And they sat down and they built a custom Google search, which any of you can do, and you know, just takes a second to do. And they just went discipline by discipline of the groups that were in the room, the mathematicians, the chemists, and they went and found the repositories that had chemistry stuff and had math stuff. And, you know, so they grabbed NSF repositories and they grabbed some NASA repositories, and they just pointed the Google custom search at those repositories and then went to the chemists and said, here's a custom search for you. For OER, mathematicians, here's a slightly different custom search. But reference librarians, they think this way. And, you know, it's great to have leaders like these guys who, you know, are in the positions that they're in on campus, but we need everybody to be part of this open conversation. Faculty are absolutely core to this. Students are core as a demand element to this, but librarians, bookstore managers, instructional designers, institutional researchers, get everybody involved. And I think the comment you made about getting an OER committee on your campus and being very inclusive in that is really important.
Yeah, and it's I'm smiling because I mean this is it's so funny. It's been a more recent discussion about getting that going on our campus, but it's become ever more apparent. I can't tell you how many conversations James and I have both had on campus where people go, "Wow, I'm kind of interested in that. I knew it was going on, but I didn't really know all the details of it. That sounds exciting. That sounds interesting. How can I participate?" So that's starting to happen. James has gone around the campus for now several years and shared the concepts and ideas of open educational resources to the faculty and staff and students of our college. And now we've got the interest built. Now they just want to know the details. And it's hopefully a way we can get some help. Because we're limited. We just don't have that many people. So to get more people being willing to participate and contribute, not just contribute content, but contribute help in reviewing content, it would be huge. So if any volunteers in here, let me know.
Thank you, Cable, for plugging the librarians, because I am IT and library. We spend a lot of time and money, and this is global in the library world, on discovery tools. Or, you know, trying to figure out what is going to work for the students, whether it's Google, something open source, something proprietary, where it mixes the licensed resources, the open source. And that's what I'm struggling with now, is making something that's statewide, but then has the customized interfaces where it will fit K-12, it will fit student K-12 and post-secondary, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's a big industry. No one's got the silver bullet yet. Mm-hmm. But definitely working on it. So discovery tool is the buzzword right now for us.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we're actually we've had a lot of collaboration with our library in the past several years. And there's a lot of interest with our library faculty and staff in not only contributing to these projects but also to contribute assistance. In addition, we're building a front-end site that's just going to be, something a little bit flashier and more welcoming, if you will. Right now, you know, we just have a little site that says click here to enter. I mean, it's again, very much in its infancy. But we're developing a pretty nice-looking website that's hopefully going to be attractive. We know that marketing appeal is something that will help bring in the students. But I think as well as faculty, just being able to have a nice, simple place where there's only 3 or 4 buttons to click on. And, one box, click here, go in, you know. And so we're working on that right now too. So I know we're just about out of time. Does anyone have any last burning questions that they want to ask right now? Otherwise, James and I will both be up here for several minutes to answer any questions that you guys have. We thank you profusely for attending. We want to remind you also that there is an online evaluation, I believe, available for all the sessions. So please feel free to go to that. And I know there was some handout stuff. I don't even know if there's enough for everybody, but there's a stack of stuff that was given to us, and we're going to put that stack up here. If anyone's interested in grabbing one, please feel free. Thank you very much. The URL. Yes. The URL is, it's real easy. It's www.canyons.edu/OER. So I'll type it up there in a second as well. But www.canyons.edu/OER. Again, right now it points to a very hokey looking site that says click here to enter. But once you do so, you'll get into the repository and you'll be able to at least poke around and see some of the objects in there. There are bugs, there are problems with it, but at this point, you know, it's a growing phase, and we certainly have our growing pains with it. So again, thank you very much.